Hello, my name is Liz Mosley, and welcome to CBI at 10 in the third, and for now at least, the final webinar in our series about thriving regions and nations. We're joined today by a group of people who are all members of the CBI's Thriving Regions and Nations Steering Board, as well as Matthew Fell, who is often with us, Chief UK Policy Director for the CBI, to sort of steer our way through a particular aspect of the conversation around levelling up, about accelerating the investment, the all-important regional investment that can really put some of these exciting plans into reality. And I'm looking forward to hearing from our guests today about their real life experiences of trying to do this in practice. And we'll touch a little bit on the politics of it too. So if I start with Matthew, I can't help but talk first about the cost of living crisis, and I know we do this a lot. You, on the one hand, you've got a very clear, particularly from the CBI, drive for growth. And on the other hand, you've got a very, very real economic problem in the cost of living crisis. How are those two things going to work together? Can they work together?
Yeah, well, thanks, Liz, and hi, everybody. The reality is that a lot of the drivers behind the cost of living crisis, if we think about, you know, labour shortages, we think about global supply chain challenges, global energy costs and so on, look, we should be doing everything we possibly can to mitigate that. But the reality is that is really tricky. And the best way through, in our opinion, of alleviating a cost of living crisis is to get investment going as much as we possibly can from business. And that will power growth, which ultimately is the best way through all of this. But I think there's the reality in the context of today's conversation is the cost of living crisis actually makes the challenge of levelling up really, really much harder. It's already a big ask. We're looking to reverse a sort of decades-long trend of tackling regional inequalities. We know the UK is actually one of the most sort of imbalanced or unequal countries in that regard already. And the cost of living crisis just makes it more challenging because, look, you're almost sort of trying to run to stand still if we've got an attempt at levelling up on the one hand, and then we've got all these hits to standard of living, disposable income and so on coming on the other. That makes it much more challenging. What I would say, Liz, is whilst it makes it much more challenging, it also just makes it even more important that we get on and try and address it, because it's just yet another reason why it should be sort of top of the agenda.
Now, I couldn't help but notice as I closed the door behind me on my way into the office, the Today programme this morning was broadcasting from Leeds. I know there's a great big conference going on there. And in fact, John Godfrey, who's with us today, is there at the conference at the Royal Armouries in Leeds. The Prime Minister recently did a Cabinet Away Day in Stoke-on-Trent, sunny Stoke. Does this sort of thing matter, first of all, when you sort of draw the political and media spotlight to a regional centre like that? And how can other places, if they fancy a bit of the action, how do you make that happen?
Yeah, Liz, I think it is really important, actually, to put yourself on the map. And there are many ways in which you can do this. As you know, the CBI has been doing quite a lot of work about the role that economic clusters can play in promoting local growth. And one of the things we've heard from both business and civic leaders as we've travelled around the country is the importance of just having, firstly, an important and authentic narrative or ability to have a sort of compelling storytelling about what you are trying to do, what you want to be famous for, what your competitive advantage is in the UK and in the world. So I think that is the most important thing we've identified, having that authentic narrative about a place. And that's really important then, look, if you're trying to attract in investment into the area, if you're trying to grab political attention and get some decisions made and a bit of focus on you, if you're actually looking to attract people and talent in to sort of get behind what you're doing. All of these things are really important. I think it's also especially important for those parts of the country that don't necessarily have an obvious political sort of spokesperson, a regional mayor or something like that, important that everyone can unite behind the same story. And the other thing, Liz, that can help is actually just a sort of an event, an activity, something that can act as a sort of unifying thing that can be a catalyst for a place. We've seen it often happen with sporting events, for example, the Olympics, the Commonwealth Games are good at this. It might be a sort of city of culture kind of activity, but something that people can rally behind as well, that can act as a catalyst for activity as well.
Thanks, Matthew. I'm pleased you mentioned clusters, because brief moment for a plug, Tortoise are working with the CBI on a series of regional regional roadshow events, particularly around clusters. The first one was last week. And if you want to watch it back, I think if you type in CBI clusters thinking into Google, it will reveal itself. And the next one is on the 14th of June at the University of Strathclyde. So if that's something that particularly all drives, everything we hear in these thinkers will drive towards the creation of a playbook about how to do clustering properly. So if you want to participate in that and hear from people who are doing it, then please do come along. I'm going to come to Hayley now. Hayley Holmes is with us. Hayley, you are the head of new business for Lendlease. And just let's start by sort of understanding a bit about what Lendlease is as a business and why you decided to join the CBI Thriving Regions and Nations Steering Board. What does it mean to Lendlease as part of your strategy?
Sure. So Lendlease is an integrated property company, is probably the best way to describe what we do. We have a construction business. We have a development business, which has about a 20 billion pipeline in the UK in terms of major urban regeneration projects. And then we also have an investment management business, which is primarily sort of managing third-party capital. Globally, we manage about 20 billion, so about mid-size. In terms of our interest in the leveling up agenda, I think that like most organizations, we think for the UK to tap into its full growth potential, there needs to be multiple poles of economic activity. It can't all be heavily clustered in one location. Otherwise, you're missing out on human capital potential, right, that will increase productivity and growth for the country overall. So I think that we have that broad view, as many organizations do, in terms of the need to stimulate broad-based UK economic growth and activity. And we invest in the regions, right? Mm-hmm. So we see what that opportunity is and want to help facilitate the continued growth and support the regions as best we can.
So it's really about unlocking the potential that is obviously there, but you have to lean into it if you're going to make that happen. I'm going to bring in John now, if I may. John Godfrey is Corporate Affairs Director for Legal and General. And I believe, John, you are in sunny Leeds. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. I'm at the UK REEF conference, which is a big property conference here. And the reason we're here, apart from it's a great opportunity to meet lots of people from regions and local authorities, all basically laying out their pitch. But the real reason that we're here is to announce our first partnership deal with a combined authority, which is with the West Midlands, where we intend to invest £4 billion over 7 years. So I've been busy talking about that with Andy Street, the mayor of the West Midlands, and it feels like quite an exciting moment. It's the first big levelling up announcement since the levelling up white paper, and it's the first one we've done with a combined authority, although we have several partnerships in different parts of the country already.
It's brilliant stuff, John. Congratulations on making the announcement. I know that there's been a ton of work will have got you to this point. So a real moment of sort of celebration, I'm sure, for you and the team and indeed the mayor. Just, I think people know obviously what Legal and General is. Just tell us a bit about, you know, that project is one example. I'm sure there are others sort of coming down the track. What is the interest of Legal and General in being part of the CBI's Thriving Regions and Nations Steering Board? How does this fit into your overall strategy?
Well, about a decade ago, we realized it was sort of economics 101, but if the UK was going to be more productive, we had to help productivity improve in those parts which had been a bit left behind, i.e. outside London. And you do get more for your money outside London as well. So over the last 10 years, we've invested about £30 billion, a little bit more than that, in cities including Newcastle, Sunderland, Manchester, Sheffield, Birmingham, Cardiff, Glasgow, Edinburgh, Bristol, etc. And this has gone really well. And the reason, one of the reasons it's attractive is because this is creating new asset classes and new real assets that are very useful in helping pay pensions, which of course is one of our main businesses. And yeah, we manage about £1.4 trillion. And it's nice to have a slice of that invested into the UK economy and driving levelling up.
Thanks ever so much. I think on the one hand, we've got Hayley saying, we know that there's an opportunity, we just need to lean into unlocking it. And then John is saying, well, you know, we've been unlocking it for some years now and it's proven to work. So we're sort of getting lots of ticks in boxes. I'm going to bring in Chris Sood-Nichols. He and I spoke actually as part of the CBI annual conference last year about this. So secretly, I know a little bit about what Chris does, but just give us the sort of brief version of your role inside of Lloyds and how Lloyds will be sort of leaning into the Thriving Regions and Nations Steering Board. What are you looking to get out of this?
Thanks, Liz. And I guess it's one of the UK's largest financial institutions. You know, we owe our heritage to the regions. Our organisation was founded in the West Midlands some 250 years ago. And we recognise, first and foremost, that a huge effort has been made by many people around levelling up. I think it was Disraeli who first coined the term. You know, we're trying to do this with a good dose of humility. But our goal is really to channel incremental capital into towns, into cities, into businesses, because ultimately we're a bank. That's what we do. We lend to small businesses, large businesses, infrastructure projects, etc. But do so in a way that will help drive forward regeneration and ultimately will deliver both social and environmental benefits alongside commercial returns. Because at the end of the day, we see so much potential and there's a huge amount of great activity that's happening at the moment. But these actions are together, it can't just be us, but together with companies like Legal & General and Lendlease, collectively I think we can help the UK's regions become more competitive, both domestically and internationally. I guess what really appealed to us about the Thriving Regions Steer Code was the opportunity to join forces with like-minded business leaders to form a coalition of the willing, if you like, that together could look carefully at ways that we can deliver catalytic private sector investments into levelling up. And that's why we're excited about the opportunity and the efforts.
But it's all been going rather swimmingly up to now. We've got lots of advocates here. We've got people really making a go of it. But we wouldn't be here if this was easy. The fact is that, you know, there have been lots and lots of people wanting to make this a reality. But there are barriers. And obviously our jobs is to sort of try and bring those barriers down, I suppose, in partnership with government where appropriate. I might sort of go back round the panel and end up at Matthew at the end. What do you think the barriers are for businesses when it comes to regional investment? What are some of the things you've encountered?
Well, I can speak primarily from my own perspective. I know that there's lots of barriers, right? But one of the ones that people tend to bump up against is underlying infrastructure, right? Mm-hmm. So as companies look to, for example, let's say they see that there's a skilled population in the regions that they'd like to tap into, a student population that they think could be increasingly sticky, right, and provide a useful and productive workforce for them. There needs to be the underlying infrastructure that allows that growth to take place. So they need to have a commercial office that they can lease that's available, right, for them to locate. And then they need to be able to have housing for their staff. And that sounds simple. But the lagging factor there in terms of relocation decisions and being able to sort of bring those plans to fruition doesn't mean that there's always that balance between supply and demand of the underlying infrastructure that's there. But I'd say, so from our perspective, that's one of the things that we're always looking at and trying to meet and help facilitate growth mm-hmm. through the built environment. Above and beyond that, though, I would say that the challenge is creating that skilled workforce in that location, right, which is the biggest driver for how people invest, where they want to locate, et cetera. And the other big factor is making sure that there is a supportive cluster of businesses, because no business stands on its own, right, and that there are the synergies and broader sort of economic opportunities being developed in tandem that make the overall location attractive.
What you're saying, Hayley, really resonates from the case study we heard from AstraZeneca in Cambridge last time about the sort of the town planning aspect of making this work for a business was really fascinating to me. John, what do you think, what do you see as the major barriers to regional access to finance, I suppose, is one of the things. You need the cash, you need the investment. Why can that be difficult for businesses?
As a general rule, it tends to be much more straightforward doing this in a big city than in a smaller place. And the thing that we found that works really well is to operate a kind of partnership in a city, and ideally that involves a university as well as the local government. And mm-hmm. that's what we did in Newcastle, and that works. We have university partnerships elsewhere, and the universities can be a great economic anchor, if you like. Easier in big places than smaller places. One of the barriers, I think, is empowerment of local government. You are quite reliant on local government to deliver this, and they have to have A, the vision, and B, the ability to deliver that vision in partnership with you. And this is why the trailblazer devolution deals that have been announced for the West Midlands and Greater Manchester will be quite important. So there is a potential here to address issues like planning and some of the more complicated procurement issues and the things that tend to hold up projects. And I think there is an argument for creating something like a levelling up zone in those places as part of the next stage of devolution. And that is really an enterprise zone writ large, where as developers and investors, we can proceed at scale and pace, because otherwise you do tend to get bogged down if you don't have that.
Yeah. Thanks ever so much, John. Chris, is it all sounding familiar to you? Are there any particular barriers we've not mentioned yet?
Yes, I'd echo everything that that Hayley and John have shared so far. I think obviously the elephant in the room for many, if we're talking about local authorities, combined authorities, is of course devolution, but also the lack of new monies in the current fiscal cycle. I guess if we look at other countries, the journey that East and West Germany went on, it took decades and billions of Deutschmarks and then euros of investment to bring levelling up to fruition. And I think just drawing on Matthew's comment at the start, this is considerable. This is a considerable task, and we're trying to do it at a time of historic levels of inflation, but also a considerable national debt burden. East and West Germany had their own challenges, but they weren't trying to do this in the aftermath of a global pandemic. So, we have to remind ourselves that this is going to be a long journey. It's a marathon, not a sprint. So I think those are a couple of the barriers. Elsewhere, and this is what we hear when we talk to towns and cities, there's been creation of multiple sources of funding. So the Towns Fund, the Levelling Up Fund, the Shared Prosperity Fund, which are all great. But they're often complicated for cities to navigate, particularly towns as well. And they do drain time and resources from local and combined authorities. And this can sometimes feel like a barrier rather than an enabler.
There's a bureaucracy element to it. There's sort of the money's there, but you just have to really try to get access to it.
It feels that way to a lot of people, I think, and hence the point around devolution and creation of vehicles that can channel investment more quickly. I think another barrier is we also know that there are swathes of communities that are underserved. We approve 9 out of 10 small business loans typically that we receive applications for, and that's a record that we're rightly proud of. And that said, there's a community of small businesses that we don't serve yet who may not have applied for a loan in the first place because they may not have the right paperwork, they may not be able to offer collateral for the loan. And these are barriers that the financial community needs to address. We're exploring new ways in which we might be able to help these really small customers in deprived regions in the future.
Just briefly, Chris, I'm going to come and talk about central government and whose job it is to sort of try and take down some of these barriers. Just briefly on regulation, if there was one regulatory change that might take away some of those barriers, I mean, you've only got one, so choose carefully. What would it be?
Well, I'd love to choose two, but I'll be good and go for just one. And I won't talk about devolution because we've touched on it. So for me, I think it would be a much greater focus on the opportunity for blended finance to play a role in driving levelling up. So quite often investments can be too risky for private finance, especially where they're at the frontier. And that could be geographically, it could be in terms of technology or business models. So blended finance combines concessional public funds with commercial funds, which can be a really powerful means of rebalancing risks and enabling investment. We've seen many examples of this in green technology, whether it's public sector money is acting as a first loss tranche for investments, the creation of contracts for difference to support pricing mechanisms for offshore wind. But on this point, if you look at the scale of finance that needs to be deployed, whether it be addressing net zero, whether it be addressing levelling up, it has to come from blended sources. And to the point around there being no new money, the opportunity surely here is for private sector capital to combine with public sector monies, leverage those and contribute to regional growth.
Thanks ever so much, Chris. Matthew, in the Queen's speech last week, levelling up seemed to reappear, reemerge, if it had ever gone away, as part of the levelling up regeneration bill. But the question on my brief is, what is the role of the government in driving levelling up? We've obviously got some, brilliant and talented business people here with us today, and lots more on the Thriving Regions and Nations Board. Chris has just been talking about blended finance. So I guess my question is, what are the levers that are the ones that the government need to pull hard on, and what stuff are everybody else to really lean into?
Yeah. Well, I think the bits for the government to focus on, in a way, just sort of play back, actually, what Chris Haley and John have just been talking about. I think in this sense, often international businesses are really quite sort of clear-eyed on the things that matter, because they're sort of dispassionate about location in that sense. And they often have a sort of investment location dashboard almost, or scorecard of the things that they're looking for. My experience is most will sort of start with skills. So you want the sort of appropriately and highly skilled workforce, so supply of labour in a place. I think then they would talk about infrastructure, increasingly digital, road and rail, so that people can get to work and goods to market. And depending on the nature of the business, sea and airport access, really critical as well for internationally. So infrastructure would be number two on the list. And then I think, you know, look, Haley touched on this, but attractive places for people to live. And that speaks to housing as well, if you want to get a workforce there and things like that sort of thing. So I think that sort of scorecard approach is quite a good way of focusing in on, look, regardless of where you are, those are some of almost like the hygiene factors of just what you need in a location to be in the game. And then I think that the other bit that I would say, is, and I think this is quite a sort of useful and important shift in mentality. I think too often in the past, we've kind of had a view on here's what we're trying to impose on a place, and then sort of uniformly look to sort of put that around the country sort of thing. And everyone wants to be good at everything. And I've detected a little bit of a shift in that. And I think the trick for government then is to be actually highly responsive and adaptive to the specified business needs in a given location, depending on what that might be. So look, if I'm looking to do something that's a sort of highly innovative business, for example, it might be that I just need more regulatory agility because it needs to keep pace with what's going on. If I'm looking to do something for the first time, it might be some of the issues that Chris has just been talking about having a ready supply of finance to get there. Often at sort of a pre-commercialization stage, for example, with public and private working in partnership together. It might be that actually I need a different approach to skills, and therefore the powerful connections with schools, with colleges and universities that John was talking about earlier, that comes to the fore, for example. So I would say, Liz, the issue is firstly, combination of focus on those critical hygiene factors, skills, infrastructure, housing, a regulatory environment and planning and things like that are really important everywhere. And then to be highly responsive to the needs of business in a given location. A combination of those two things are really what we need from government.
Thanks, Matthew. I can see Hayley nodding gently too, that some of the points that Matthew was making, regulatory agility, we've mentioned infrastructure before. There's a question that's come in from Tom Hadley, always asks us questions on these webinars, which is, it's sort of talking specifically about skills, but about the time it would take for some of these, if you were going to have a scorecard, you know, ticks in boxes, have we got the skills base? Is there, you know, is there nice housing where people are going to want to live? All of that stuff. What needs to happen first? To sort of, does it all need to be there already for a business to sort of come in? Or I'm interested, perhaps, Hayley, to know, do you think there are any actions the government particularly could take now to get change happening quickly in the regions where you work? Because some of this stuff, it feels like it would be, you know, 20, 30 years worth of time to make some of these things really feel major.
No, I mean, I would say that we've already invested in the regions and we already see the potential there. So it's really about maximizing that. I think that there's a couple of things if we're thinking about leveling up. So I'm going to answer the question sort of directly and indirectly. So bear with me, give me some room. So I think that what can happen reasonably quickly, depending on the specific location, is that government can support the growth of new industry, right? So what I would say is, existing industries that are already clustered in specific locations, it's very sticky, right, to have that transition to other locations because there's a clustering effect that inherently is difficult to sort of, it creates an inertia. But where you can see fastest growth is where government supports the growth of some of, let's say, new economy industries in new locations. Through very direct support of things like university programs and infrastructure and all of that. And that can actually manifest itself much more quickly. I would say, though, that one of the things that I've been sort of thinking about since joining the panel is what leveling up really means. And there's inter-regional disparities as well as intra-regional disparities, right? And I think that in some ways, why it can be quick is because what you're doing a lot of times is you're saying, we don't want all of the winners in life to move to London, who already are intelligent and educated, et cetera, to just cluster in one place. We want to take some of those and sort of spread them around the country. But you haven't actually necessarily decreased overall inequality. You're just spreading the winners around a bit more, right, in different locations. And then I think there's a more fundamental problem then, or issue to address, which is how do you actually level up the people who were never going to be winners, irrespective of how things were clustering? And that's a different skills challenge that needs addressing in a slightly different way beyond the scorecard that we were talking about for internal investment and things like that.
Really fascinating. Yeah, it's super hard, but a really important, I think, distinction to well, not even a distinction, but it's an overall facet of the programme. John, the CBI has recently called on government particularly to be, and I'm reading this from my brief, so the language is specific, market makers and a growth HQ. Is that right? Do you agree?
Well, I certainly think there is a big role that government can play in doing that. I think it's not just central government. I sort of keep going back to the point about empowered local government. And, you know, one of the things I think we could do where we talk about city deals is to have explicitly as part of those city deals a requirement to leverage in private sector capital to drive growth. So I think we could be doing that. But to sort of pick up on an earlier point, what I think is really important from a government point of view is to allow and encourage cities and regions to develop their own economic visions. We can't have the same thing in every place. You know, we don't need 70 life science clusters in the UK. So if you take an example like sort of Gloucestershire or Herefordshire, not obvious levelling up places, perhaps, the ideal way forward would be to think, what have they got there as an existing asset? Well, they have a skill base in GCHQ, a lot of knowledge. They could create an ARC specialising or a cluster specialising in cybersecurity. It's a fairly obvious thing to do there. It's a bit different from what is being done elsewhere. So we have to have this sort of local regional diversity in order to really thrive. And I think, you know, government can play a part in fostering that, but it is much more down to a local vision, because as we've found from countless investments across the UK, it's the people on the spot who really know what will help to make a city tick. They just need a bit of a hand in delivering that, really.
And in the case of the partnership that you've just announced for the West Midlands, the Metro Mayor was a critical part of that sort of constellation of people. So that in that instance, that really worked.
Yes, absolutely. Andy Street has been hugely supportive of this because he has an ambitious vision. But we do need to have the seven local authorities in the West Midlands also bought into it. And I think that is going to happen. So, but yes, absolutely. He's been the sort of figurehead that has driven this forward, really.
That's great. Thanks, John. Chris, same question to you about sort of whose job is it? The market makers and a growth HQ. We've talked about the role of local government. Hayley touched on, you know, businesses working together too. Does it feel like the burden of responsibility is sitting in the right place? Are people looking to the right people to make this happen at the moment?
I think so, but that burden has to be a shared burden, doesn't it? So, you know, national government, we've seen some of the signs already that they're moving with intent. The creation of the UK Infrastructure Bank in Leeds, you know, some of the Treasury going into Darlington, DLUHC having a branch in Wolverhampton. These are all encouraging signals. I won't go back over the devolution piece, because I think that point's been really well made by other panellists. But I think if we are going to make a fundamental difference to the economic and social fabric of the UK, the private sector has to play a meaningful role. And, you know, that's businesses investing in regions, you know, that's funds providers like ourselves providing capital. It must be a collective national effort. Yeah, sure, government, both local and national, can help steer this. And I agree completely with the idea of a vision, the importance of a vision and a narrative for a particular place, drawing on the skills that are there, but also building skills to future-proof the towns and cities' prospects over the next couple of decades. But yes, government has a key role to play, both locally and nationally.
I don't know if this is a fair question or not, but there are those people who say, I'm not sure that I've heard them say it particularly on CBI webinars, but there have been people who've come into the Tortoise Thinkings and said, government just need to get out of the way. There's tons of private money. It's all there. It's ready to go. And government are frustrating us by sort of meddling in some way, shape or form. I'm sort of ventriloquizing somebody else's point of view. Is that right?
It's a good challenge and it's a fair challenge. And we often hear it. My answer is I don't think so. As I said before, government, local and nationally, are key partners in this journey. The private sector can't do it alone. This wall of private sector money that's waiting, it can be deployed. But the sorts of things that it can be deployed into, in my view, if we think about the net zero transition, the scale of investment that's going to be required for levelling up, and I come back to this point around blended finance, it has to be a partnership. And what we need government to do is be more assertive in channeling catalytic capital, whether it be towns, cities, regions, projects, which private finance can then blend with that will genuinely accelerate growth. And I think for that reason, government shouldn't get out of the way. They're a key stakeholder in this. And that's the sort of partnership that we really need to build. Now, there are great examples that you can look to, whether it be previous examples in the UK or the European Union. But we just need more of them and we need to do them at pace.
Thanks so much, Chris. I'm going to just ask a quick question to John and then I'm going to come to Matthew. John, the government's levelling up ambitions have been enshrined into law. To be achieved by 2030, which sort of seems like a slightly odd thing to get my head around, that you have to do it. Is it achievable, what we've said we're going to achieve?
I think certainly a lot can be achieved by 2030. The job is one which essentially will never be finished. But what is important to have enshrined in law is that it will be measured and monitored and reported on, and it won't just be part of a speech and then forgotten about. So I think it's helpful to have that in law because it will hold everybody to account.
Thanks ever so much, John. Matthew, I'm very taken with Hayley's point about the overall sort of scope of the levelling up agenda is not just about raising the ceiling, but also about lifting the floor, that everybody, not just the few people who would prosper anyway, spreading themselves around a little bit. What do you think is missing from the government's levelling up agenda? Do you think that Hayley's point is adequately considered in the way we're thinking about it? Or is there other things as well that are missing that we could sort of move faster on that would get us closer to where we need to be by 2030?
Liz, thanks. And actually, so to answer that, I'm probably going to sort of link together what Hayley's remarks there that you've just highlighted, but also what John has just said. I mean, I think if we sort of critique the government agenda, I would say, firstly, look, there's a really high quality diagnostic, a very serious assessment of the regional inequalities and what lies behind them. So that is really, really good. Secondly, I think the critique would say actually the strategy and the plans are pretty comprehensive. There's several sort of dozen or so missions that you mentioned sort of enshrined in law about things we're going to improve and get better on. And they cover all the right areas that we've been talking about so far on skills and infrastructure and housing and so on. The bit I think that is urgently needed now is just a relentless focus on delivery. And that would include, as John has said, I think it's all well and good to have things put in law that say we're going to hit those by 2030. But actually, let's have some live dynamic business plans that have got milestones. They've got KPIs. We can work out, are we on track? Who's on the hook for what? And a really relentless focus on delivery. That's what's going to get us there, I think.
Interesting. Chris, do you agree?
Yes, I do, Liz. And I think just coming back to that point around them being enshrined in law, yes, it is helpful from the point of view of accountability. But it's also really critical that if they're enshrined in law, the sorts of policies that underpin them are going to be really hard to dig up. We know that there's going to be political change over the next decade. That's to be expected. But what we need for Levelling Up to succeed is for there to be a consistency of delivery. Whatever political change may be on the horizon, whatever point in time, shouldn't be able to unroot the effort, which is to try and make this country stronger, more competitive, both regionally and nationally.
Hayley, I sort of want to return to our optimistic opening vibe that we had at the beginning of the conversation before we got into the weeds of governments and regulation and so on. How do you think businesses, particularly, because this is the CBI after all, and on the Thriving Regions and Nations Steering Board, there's a ton of ambitious and interesting businesses trying to do this and work together. How do you think businesses can work together or work together better, perhaps, to sort of really champion the region in which they operate and be a voice for inward investment?
Channels like this, I think, are a really positive start, where we sort of communicate what the opportunity is with a single voice from multiple perspectives, right? Mm-hmm. And sort of be ambassadors of sorts for regional investment and regional growth. But I think beyond that, I think we were talking about how I mentioned what drives growth from our very specific perspective and what we can do, but there's obviously finance aspects to that. There's different components that all need to come together. And I think thinking about how we collaborate across industries to bring all of those pieces together, because no one individual piece can deliver all of it. No one business can sort of make a region work. I think that's probably strategically what needs to happen more in terms of intra-business discussion.
Interesting. John, that point that Hayley makes about collaborating across sectors, has that been a sort of a critical aspect of, for example, the partnership you've just announced this morning or others that you're working on? How do you work with people around your immediate sort of frame of reference at Legal & General?
It is hugely important, and I think will be increasingly important. If you think about something like the idea of creating a smart city, which is very much digitally managed and run, that requires collaboration across technologies. It requires collaboration across communications and finance, telephone companies, data companies, whoever. And so that sort of thing will be enormously important. Where we've found it's worked effectively in the past is typically a sort of collaboration which enables us to talk to a university to talk about their spin-outs and what those small companies might need in order to scale up and therefore to provide specialist infrastructure. And a really good example of that is the former AstraZeneca site at Alderley Park, which now is home to 220 SMEs in the life science and tech space. So you definitely need that collaboration between sectors.
Thanks, John. And Chris, while we're just talking about collaboration, it's easy to talk about and quite hard to do when we've talked about these sorts of things before. You've done some work on trends shaping the sort of accessibility of different types of businesses to get hold of the money. It's not quite a sort of businesses working with businesses, but businesses working with the finance sector. Is it a level playing field? Does everybody have an equal chance, or are some people struggling more than others? Some types of businesses struggling more than others?
Yeah, I think it very much depends. And clearly the pandemic has been an enabler for some businesses, and it's been incredibly difficult for others in other sectors. So as a lender, we have to make some tough calls sometimes. So that's not straightforward. Is the playing field level enough? Probably not. Are there common challenges? Yes, absolutely. And as a major lender, part of our role is to make sure we can understand those challenges and try and address them as best we can. I guess if I look more broadly across the landscape, and this is reflecting some of the conversations we've had with UK cities over the last 12 months, a lot of the challenges that they're facing are very similar. And whether that's accelerating the growth of local housing stock at pace. That's a very common challenge. Another one is tackling the funding of green transition, particularly domestic retrofits. It's staggering that actually in some cities, the greenhouse gas emissions from housing accounts for about 40% of total city emissions. And this is a result of poor quality housing stock. So big challenges that need to be solved, and the funding that goes with those sorts of challenges are not straightforward.
Thanks ever so much. Chris, just briefly before we close, Matthew, what's next for the CBI's Thriving Regions and Nations Steering Board? What can we expect to see coming out of this group of brilliant people doing great stuff?
Well, Liz, look, a couple of things on this agenda. One is hopefully, as we've heard today, we'll begin to pinpoint the issues that really matter and come up with a series of recommendations about how they can be done well in place. I think, secondly, as you mentioned earlier on, we're on a little bit of a tour of the country on a roadshow, looking at dropping in to hoover up the expertise from many of the economic clusters that already exist around the country, and understanding how we take those from good to great, and again capture the things that the success factors, if you like, that we all need to get good at on those. And then hopefully we'll be able to pull the threads from all of that together into a little bit of a playbook that says, look, if you're a business looking to invest in a location, in a place, these are the things that you need to do and get good at. And similarly for government, if you want to make that easier and more possible, here are the actions for you. So that's going to be our contribution to the whole levelling up agenda that we're committed to, Liz.
Brilliant. Thanks ever so much, Matthew. A heartfelt thank you to Chris and to Hayley and to John for joining us. I know everybody's got very, very busy days. If you would like to be part of those cluster conversations working towards the CBI playbook, the next one is on the 14th of June at the University of Strathclyde, but they're all listed on the CBI website, so you can go along and book, and everybody would be delighted to see you, including some of my colleagues here at Tortoise who are part of those events too. So have a great rest of the day, whether you're watching live or listening back, and as I always say, go put the kettle on before you check your emails. Have a great day. Thanks so much, everybody. Bye.